I appreciate you guys tuning in, joining the show right now. Kirk Morrison, what's going on, Kirk?
Hi, Alan. How we doing, my man?
Good, man. How about you?
Nah, I'm hanging, man. Hanging as always, man. It's always news. Always news.
Always something going down. By the way, I just get your thoughts on the. I get your thoughts on this real quick. You know, I spent the last hour, and I know this is all over sports right now. And one of the things I enjoy when we talk sports, you know, you're well versed in everything. I know you played in the league, and we're going to talk some football. But what are your thoughts, real quick, on this Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, the cheating scandal with the Houston Astros? You know, obviously, how this hits much deeper to L.A. because they were so close to winning a World Series in 2017. How do you feel like everything has been handled? And, you know, maybe you could speak from a player's perspective. Have you ever seen players, this big-time names kind of coming out, and really, in my opinion, trashing the commissioner of baseball?
Yeah, on so many levels, I'm kind of upset with baseball, which was my first love growing up as a kid, right? I played baseball all the way up until I got to my junior year of high school, and I kind of had to decide, you know, what was going to be a better opportunity for me to get an athletic scholarship, and football was a much better way for me to do that because I just couldn't hit the curveball.
what position, real quick, Kirk, what position did you play?
Oh, I was third base all the way up to my sophomore year. Then I start pumping iron. I start hitting the weights, my man. And then I could no longer control the throw from third to first. They moved me out to right field because I still was a power hitter.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I was still, you know, I could still knock them out the park, but it was either I was going to swing, so I was either a home run or a strikeout. And then you never know what you're going to get each and every game. But you know, I grew up loving baseball.
Yeah.
And I grew up knowing the hidden rules, right? You know, the rules in which that that you know about in baseball, you know, whether it's, you know, you're not taking a guy out at second base when you're sliding in or, mm-hmm. you know, trying to steal signs, anything like that. But we always did it within the framework, right? You know, I would go back to just my third base coach when he would give us signs and how we would try to vary up what we did each and every game because we never wanted the team to figure out what we were doing, you know, whether we were hitting and running, whether we were stealing, where we were taking, bunting, whatever it may be.
And that's all part of the game.
And that's all part of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of it. And if from what I've gathered and what I've heard and what's been talked about is, you know, the Houston Astros took it to a different level, right? I mean, we're talking about straight up cheating, mm-hmm. like knowing, you know, what's being thrown each and every play. And the Altuve video to me is just so damning, Alan. I can't get past it. And mm-hmm. the thing is, you know, you mentioned my football background, but, you know, I just thought about when I was playing and what we thought about the Patriots and what they were doing for taping a walkthrough. Hmm. That's like taping batting practice, right, in baseball or just them fielding ground. Like, and the NFL took away draft picks. They made the Patriots, you know.
Spygate, right. They have their own term.
I mean, mm-hmm. Right. So we've seen the NFL, how do they handle cheating? And they continue to handle it the right way. This right here, I'm really upset with baseball because obviously there have been no suspensions to the players. I kind of understand that because it's something in which the Major League Baseball Players Association is now involved. But I really believe that I haven't seen the uproar, like you mentioned, from the Dodgers, from the Yankees organization, you know, from the Oakland Athletics organization where, you know, other owners aren't saying, you know what, I got cheated. I got cheated out of an opportunity to win a World Series championship. And I think that's what I'm more outraged at, is that the other organizations are not out being outspoken and making a big deal about it. It's the players who are making a big deal about it, and that should not be the case. I mean, the players are going to definitely, I understand why, but come on, Alan, is there an organization out there that's going to step up and say, you know what, we got cheated? I mean, think about it. Jerry Jones, remember when the catch rule, right, when Dez Bryant did he catch it, did he not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jerry Jones was adamant. He was out front about it. Like, what's going on here? It's kind of similar here in baseball, but no owner is coming out saying that something has to be changed here.
Yeah, the only owner that's talked is the Astros owner, and let's just say he didn't come off very well. He didn't come off very well.
Exactly. I'm talking about the ones who were affected, though, man, and that's the hard part about baseball right now. And the crazy part about it is this is going to hang over them all season long. People will still show up. I mean, people are still going to go to games.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still going on my spring training baseball trip next month where I go for 5 days and enjoy, you know, Arizona and the warm weather and catch my, you know, afternoon baseball games. Mm-hmm. So I'm not being turned off by it. But I do think that there should be more repercussions on the Houston Astros than what's kind of been taking place so far.
Yeah, we'll see if anything changes. I think to this point, I'm losing confidence that they got the right leader in place. I'm losing confidence that they did the right thing in a situation. The best way of telling, by the way, is just the taste you have in your mouth as everything unfolds, and something just doesn't feel right. You know, it doesn't feel right that it still says the 2017 Astros are World Series champions. And you know what's crazy, Kirk? I mean, if you think about this, it is so tough to win a championship in any sport,
absolutely,
right? Like, think about how tough it is. Think about cities that have gone so many years without winning the big one. It's not a small thing.
Washington Nationals from this year. Mm-hmm. I think the Washington Nationals, to your point, this year, how long it was and what it took and them not having Bryce Harper this season and still winning a World Series, just how difficult it is, and for teams to do it the right way. But yeah, go ahead.
All right, Kirk, I kind of threw you a curveball here to get things started, but I had to talk about that. I had to get your thoughts on it.
It's the biggest topic in all of sports right now. And once you have LeBron James even, you know, adding, you know, his thoughts on the situation. His 2 cents. It's more when LeBron speaks, it's more than 2 cents, right? I mean, but let's be honest, when LeBron speaks, he carries heavy weight. And I think he's going to help out some of those Major League Baseball players who, you know, right now only the kind of a couple guys have spoken. But I think as the weeks go on, I mean, this story is just not going to die.
No, it's not.
It really isn't.
It's not. You know, and I think even –
it's crazy.
I think, Kirk, even as we get closer to first pitch, right? Like the season actually beginning, there's going to be a ton of storylines. So it will continue. Kirk, I wanted to ask you, so obviously in the last week, this isn't small news, and maybe you could talk about the significance of this, but when the Los Angeles Rams and really any NFL team, when you hire a new offensive coordinator, a new defensive coordinator, special teams coach, I mean, those are significant positions. Just your thoughts on what the Rams have done, you know, over the last week or so, week and a half, and how significant do you think that can play out for the Rams when we get into August and September?
Well, I think, Alan, a good shakeup is sometimes what you need, right? You need a good shakeup. And, you know, obviously the Rams, they win in their first 3 years, and you have 2 division titles, you have a Super Bowl appearance, and then you have 1 non-playoff appearance. And this was the year that things had to be reset, right? Whether it's in the coaching staff, we know the players are going to be reset. And, you know, for Sean McVay, the early success that he's had has really stolen away guys who were in place. We forget Matt LaFleur was his offensive coordinator year 1. He's the head coach, obviously, in Green Bay. Zach Taylor was his offensive coordinator in year 2. He's taken away. He is now the head coach with the Cincinnati Bengals. So this was the first year that he did not have an offensive coordinator, and I think the team suffered at times throughout the season. So for him hiring, you know, my college quarterback and Kevin O'Connell, which we already have a relationship, I think that's a home run for him. I really do, because Kevin O'Connell is one of the young up-and-coming coaches who, you know, knows a ton of football. You know, just sat down with him so many times and know the kind of guy he is, the makeup that he is. He's been in Washington the last couple of years and, you know, learned from Chip Kelly. I mean, he knows his football. And, you know, I'm happy that Sean McVay now has someone who can talk the offense, who can help the entire offensive unit, and let Sean McVay be a coach, which was hard for him to do this year where he's trying to juggle 2 jobs. And so I think that works for him. And defensively, I think Wade Phillips
real quick, I want to hit on Kirk. So I think that's actually significant, like you're talking about. This is important for McVay to just be a coach, right? And I think
correct.
Maybe taking on too much, this kind of helps him say, all right, you focus on this, so because he's got other things that he needs to worry about as well. What do you think that right. means? Does this now take, does Kevin O'Connell, does the focus become, okay, build this thing around Jared Goff, or is it build this thing around Todd Gurley? I mean, what's kind of the balance of this being built around throwing versus running?
Well, I think it's really about Jared Goff. I think we kind of understand with Todd Gurley that when you pay the kind of money they did to Jared Goff, this offense is now going to be catered around Jared Goff. They just need a running game to help out Jared Goff. And, you know, right now we know what Todd Gurley is. We saw what it was last year, and he says he's healthy, but yeah, we saw a different version of Todd. And so I think now when you bring in a Kevin O'Connell, when you bring in some of the new offensive minds, and the way McVay will look at this offense, I think it's going to go through a Jared Goff, but you're still going to have Todd Gurley back there. But I think these hires were pretty much, you know, getting back to the basics, right? Changing things up a little bit. Are you a finesse team? Are you a power running team? You know, who are these Rams going to be in 2020? But, you know, again, I think Sean McVay can now be a coach again, right? This season was the first year he tried to just handle too much. And, I mean, I think we've done it before, right, Alan, where we try to take on everything. And all of a sudden we're like, uh-oh, this may not be good for me, right? I don't have enough time to kind of, you know, put my...
You become average at everything rather than standing out at one thing.
Correct. And look, he was a great play caller, right? And that's mm-hmm. what got him the job. And I think for him, he can still be the play caller, but there was just times, right, in a game in which, you know, just he felt like, I felt like he just didn't have the pulse of the way that the game was being played, you know, whether it was the, you know, game against Pittsburgh, right? That was a game the Rams should have won. They win that game. I think they make the playoffs. And, you know, Sean McVay, you know, did not give the ball to Todd Gurley, you know, pretty much at all in the fourth quarter. And I think that was just for him thinking that, okay, I just got to throw it, I got to throw it, I got to score it, I got to do that. But sometimes you just control the clock and control the game. And we've seen that in the playoffs and this past season. And I think Sean McVay gets back to that. You know, defensively, they got some fresh blood, new voices. You know,
save the defensive part, because I want to get your thoughts on the new defensive coordinator as well. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll talk more about the Rams. I also want to get your thoughts on USC and UCLA football. We come back as well. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Kirk, I apologize for that promo. I apologize. Sometimes I don't have control over things. Things are done behind the scenes here. Kirk Morrison joining the Sliwa Show. It's the most anticipated title fight in recent history as undefeated heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder takes on 29-0 Tyson Fury in a rematch that the world has been waiting for. Live on pay-per-view Saturday, February 22nd, 9 p.m. Eastern. That's this Saturday. Kirk, I want to continue this conversation about some of the changes the Los Angeles Rams made. New offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. I know you talked a little bit about Kevin O'Connell. How about Brandon Staley? What would you say about his position, the type of impact that he can have, and how key was he to coming in after Wade Phillips was not renewed? His contract wasn't, or he just basically eventually served the rest of his contract and nothing else after that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, for Sean, he's bringing in guys who were, think about it, a lot younger, right? I know Kevin O'Connell, I believe, he's about 34, 35, I believe, if that, maybe 34, maybe 33. I know Brandon Staley's 37, right? I mean, he's bringing in youth guys, right? Guys that around his age. You think about it, the coaching staff has gotten a lot younger than when he first started. I thought he kept guys who were already here, who kind of established the culture the players believed in. They were good, solid coaches. But I think after 3 years, you know, Coach McVay has brought in new guys. Like I said, brought in new voices. And I think Brandon Staley, who was a guy who, you know, has been coaching linebackers, and he came from Denver, and he's just been highly regarded around the National Football League as one of the more outstanding coaches. And now he gets his first opportunity to be a defensive coordinator. I think it'd be a lot of carryover from what Wade Phillips was able to do in the first couple of years. But now I think that, you know, you're going to see a little bit different, right? He's going to have his stamp on it. But I think overall, you just got to be, it's just a new voice. Guys have heard the same voice the last 3 years, and you know, you don't make the playoffs. So I've said it before. It's, you know, something has to change. Like, there's very few teams that go out and don't make the playoffs and say, "Oh, don't worry, we don't need to make changes. Let's just run it back." Like, you're at, you know, at the local pickup game at the park, right? Like, "Oh, let's just run it back." Like, "Nah, let me switch it up. Let's grab this guy and this guy. Let's do something a little different so I can stay on the court." That's what the Rams are trying to do: stay on the court.
Kirk Morrison hopping on 710 ESPN. Yeah, it is kind of it is interesting because, you know, it's a division with the 49ers obviously making it to the Super Bowl. The Seahawks, we know how talented they were in this past season behind Russell Wilson. You can't stand Pat, right? I mean, it's also extremely, extremely difficult. The path to get where the Rams want to get to goes through some really, really good teams. How do you think they stack up right now in the NFC West? Do you feel like the Rams are still the third best team? Or like you mentioned, hey, they're just a win away in Pittsburgh or a couple wins away that everybody's going through the Rams?
You know, honestly, I feel like they're on the same wavelength as the 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks, right? I mean, the Rams, they were right there in those games with all those teams, right down the stretch with the 49ers. You know, Jared Goff throws that pick before the halftime. That really changed the complexion of that last game. You know, they were a field goal away from beating Seattle in Seattle, yep. Right? I think we really have to just take a look at how is this Rams team going to upgrade? Is it going to be addition by subtraction? So I think for right now, it's kind of hard to say because March 18th is our New Year's, mm-hmm. Right? It's when we can pop the champagne. The NFL New Year will start, and we'll see what the Rams are doing. Are they going to be big in free agency in terms of having to release some guys before that 18th deadline and have a little free cap space? What happens with the Jalen Ramsey contract? Mm-hmm. Do they get that all settled away, you know, before free agency starts? Do they make some trades? They will some deals. I mean, we've already seen a couple guys retire, right? We've seen, Eric Weddle retire, and now we'll see what happens with Andrew Whitworth. I know he says he wants to be back, but there's just going to be some new players on this team, and I'm just trying to figure out where they upgrade at in some certain areas now that, you know, obviously they didn't, you know, go to the playoffs last year, but where can they upgrade without a lot of salary cap and having to get rid of some good players to get more players.
Kirk Morrison hopping on the Sliwa Show. Kirk, I want to switch gears for a quick second, okay? College football in L.A., and I'm going to kind of leave this in a very broad here. USC was ranked 10th in recruiting in just the Pac-12, 55th in the country. UCLA was 6th in the Pac-12, 32nd in the country. I know USC's got the history for football and you know, for UCLA under Chip Kelly, you know, whether you want to make an argument they're moving in the right direction or not, we'll just kind of wait and see. But USC to be 10th in the Pac-12 in recruiting, Kirk, what happened to USC football?
I think what happened to it is they're not the same program. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids don't grow up in Los Angeles thinking like, "I got to go to USC anymore." I think for a lot of us who are a lot older who witnessed those glory years of USC, it was like SC was the school. SC was the school, and it was a big thing to go to SC. But I think now when you start to look around college football, especially for me, each and every weekend I have an opportunity to go around, you know, the college ranks and go down into the SEC and see the kind of football that's being played down there and the attention to detail. I think for right now, yes, USC, are they still a hotbed for NFL prospects? Sure. But, man, it's so hard now with these kids, Alan, that are going to these Elite 11 camps, these 7-on-7 camps, these Nike Elite camps, and all of a sudden their peers, right, are saying, "Oh, I'm going to Alabama. I'm mm-hmm. going to Clemson. I'm going to Oklahoma," right? And people are seeing those teams are on national TV each and every week on ESPN, on Fox, and SC has just been not that team over the last couple of years. They haven't been the big draw that they've been in the last, I'm like, honestly, right now, if you think about it, Alan, they don't have the superstars. When you turned into USC, it was like, wow, you're going to superstars. You were going to, like, yes, it was worth the price of admission all the way. You were going to see some guys who were going to blow your mind, and now it's been not so much, right? I just think the shift from the West Coast football is just really it just hasn't been there. It's not just not exciting anymore. And I think a lot of it has to do with the Pac-12.
And that's what I was going to say, Kirk. I was going to say that, you know, I'm not even saying let's compare him to LSU and Clemson and Alabama. Right. I mean, that's a league of its own. 10th in the Pac-12 in recruiting? You know, that's to me is the mind-boggling part, is you're losing two teams in the Pac-12, and I'm not saying, okay, you're third or fourth, and there were two, three schools better than you. 10th.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also has to do with, and I'm not trying to, you know, take a shot at a guy like, you know, Clay Helton, but, you know, Clay is a guy who was a hard-nosed, you know, likable coach. But does he have the personality of, hey, look at me, bring it on? Like, you know what I mean? Where you look at Arizona State and it's Herm Edwards, right? The big name and what he's been able to draw there in Arizona State. And you think about Mike Leach and the personality that he brings, and Oregon, the brand they have. And like, now it's, you have so many other places to choose from than you once did before. And I think that also is what hurts USC, is that now kids can go anywhere,
sure,
right? They can go anywhere and be able to be a star, whether it's that you go to USC and, you know, we always call it a little bit of dry snitch, a little bit of hating going on, I think, by some other programs. Say, hey, you want to go to USC? Look at the head coach. Is he going to be back next year? If you look at the list of guys who, since, you know, like Helton has been there, the coaches who are no longer there, I think that speaks to a lot. And if I'm a young kid, am I going to go to USC? Or, you know what, Arizona State's on the rise. Or, hey, Oregon, I can wear different uniforms, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that stuff is appealing to these guys. And I said it before, man, literally, you look at these kids going to these camps, right? These big-time football camps. A lot of kids just aren't speaking the USC language right now. They're speaking the language of all these other teams who are sponsored by Team Jordan, who are sponsored by, you know, some of these other brands, and the exposure that they're getting, SC just doesn't have that exposure that they once had.
Kirk, I appreciate you doing this, man. Thanks for hopping on for a few segments here.
Oh, always, Alan. Good to talk to you, my brother.
All right, man. Have a good rest of your week. That's Kirk Morrison right there. Man, it's mind-boggling to me. I'm not going to lie. To hear, it's almost similar to, let's say we compare it to like the Lakers, the Knicks franchise. Sometimes people talk about the Knicks. I'll use the Knicks as an example. Yes, you can win in Brooklyn, but if you won in New York with the Knicks, it's just different. And I think that's the same. Yes, you can win at Utah. You can win at Arizona State, like Kirk Morrison was just mentioning right there. It's just different at USC. And until they kind of figure this thing out, it's unfortunate that we're not talking about ranked schools right here from Southern California in the Pac-12 they're getting handled. All right, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Los Angeles Lakers basketball back on Friday against the Memphis Grizzlies. We'll talk about the second half of the season with the Los Angeles Lakers. Also talk about LeBron James, his impact the rest of the season, and if he's playing too much. You know, that's always a conversation. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Manfred, you got nothing to explain. You're fine. What a wreck that has been for baseball these last couple of weeks. And I will say this, it's kind of interesting because it's brought a lot of attention to the sport, obviously in a negative light. But for me personally, you know, I used to watch a ton of baseball from the mid-90s to maybe, I don't know, to 2005, something like that. And I went away from baseball. It didn't catch my attention. Plus, you know, as you get older, you got your priorities. All right, what do I do? I got to worry about this. I got to worry about that. So I just wasn't sitting down watching games the way I was in high school and college, where I felt like I was doing nothing with my life. So as we sit here today, and I've obviously been focused and intrigued with what's going on in baseball, I don't want to be intrigued with these stories, but I am intrigued. I'd be lying to you guys if I didn't say that I'm probably going to be more interested in the game this season than I have been the last few years because of the cheating scandal. And I know it's for the wrong reasons. You know, another part of it too is, you know, again, the opportunity to do this show. It's obviously my responsibility to make sure that I'm covered on all aspects of sports from a local basis. And I know how important Dodgers baseball is to LA. But it's been fascinating. Another thing that's very important to LA. What a shock. the Los Angeles Lakers, who are 41-12 right now. 41-12 right now. What was that right there?
Well, come on. The more you know. You never heard of that, Alan? Do I have to teach you?
I'll do it on your show.
First of all, when it comes out of nowhere like that, just wasn't prepared for it, all right?
Well, that's what a drop is. You never prepared for it. Just like this. Manfred, you know what happened?
You just made the list!
Thank you.
Yeah, he's on the list. That's Jericho, right? Because only because Funches has played that before.
I am so happy you got
that. Yeah. I'm a...
You did not make the list.
I'm a wrestling guy. So here's the reality. Doris Burke, who is probably one of my favorite people to listen to. I mean, I love Doris Burke. I really, really do. And anytime she talks basketball in the NBA, I love the respect that a lot of the players give to her when she's on the sidelines.
She was on
Get Up this morning.
She was on Get Up this morning.
So Doris Burke was talking about LeBron James specifically. As we're 53 games in and we kind of start pacing ourselves towards the playoffs and hopefully a long playoff run, which accumulates in an NBA championship right here in Los Angeles for the Los Angeles Lakers. Here's Doris Burke's thoughts on LeBron James and this load management that's always been talked about.
So his ability to me to process information in real time and then manipulate and bend his game to suit the needs of his team and the needs of a season are maybe the best we've ever seen. And I'm going to give you some numbers for context, because we've spent several years, guys, talking about how LeBron James has managed the season on the defensive end. This is merely supposition. But LeBron James is averaging the most passes he ever has since tracking began. He's taking the fewest free throws. His average shot distance is the greatest it's ever been. So this is about multiple things to me. It's about making sure Anthony Davis is comfortable. It's about making sure the players around him are confident and prepared for the postseason. But it's also about managing the long haul of the season. I would suggest to you that he's managing the season on the offensive end to make sure he's in the best position in the playoff.
You know, the beauty with where the Lakers sit today, and I think it was so significant to get that win against the Denver Nuggets. When the Lakers beat Denver right before the All-Star break a week ago tomorrow, that was, I know I kind of emphasized this and maybe I was promoting it too much, but I kept trying to talk about how Lakers would have a 4-game lead in the Western Conference. They'd have a 5-game advantage over the Denver Nuggets in the loss column, 6 over the Clippers. So why do I think that's important? I think it's important because every team has kind of tried to be smarter with their stars. And when Michael Thompson talks about load management back in the 80s and the 90s, he would talk about Magic Johnson huddling everybody up together and saying, let's blow this team out so none of the stars got to play in the second half or they don't have to play in the fourth quarter. The concept of load management has been around. It's just been used in different variations. And I think the Lakers have put themselves in this position that by the time April 1st rolls around, only 29 games left, and you have a 5-game lead in the loss column against the Denver Nuggets and what would essentially be the tiebreaker. You have one more game, I think, against the Nuggets in March here at Staples Center, but you've already beat them 2 on the road. You have this cushion where I'm not saying LeBron James is going to take 5 games off in a row before the playoffs or he's going to take 10 games off. I'm not saying that's going to happen, and I'm not suggesting that. But you have this luxury of using LeBron James any way you want as you get closer to the postseason. Because it's not out of the realm to say the Lakers got the West locked up by the time we get to April 1st. It's not. Now, they got tough matchups coming up. This week alone, you got Friday, the Memphis Grizzlies that are playing some good basketball. We know how young of a team that is, led by Ja Morant, 2 games over 500, sitting at the 8th seed. This could potentially be a first-round preview between the Lakers and the Memphis Grizzlies. Boston Celtics you still have. Clippers you still have. Philadelphia 76ers, Toronto Raptors. You got a number of solid teams you're still going to have to go up against between now and, let's say, the end of March. But the Lakers have built this cushion, such an incredible cushion, that they're in a position right now, if they can take care of business for these next 20 games, play some solid basketball these next 20 games, they can be in a spot where they can do whatever they want leading up to the playoffs. And that might make the Lakers as fresh as any other team in the NBA doing load management their way. Here is Doris Burke on LeBron taking games off.
I believe he is so good, and Frank Vogel has got him to his career low in minutes. And again, the way he's playing the game is managing the season, and he's too prideful, and he feels too much responsibility to the fans and to the games, very much like Michael Jordan did. He understands that there will be nights where guys are coming into the arena specifically to see LeBron James, and he's made no bones about the fact that if I'm healthy, I'm on the floor. And frankly, there's times where he's been unhealthy and he's been on the floor, and that's what he feels about the game.
All right, so I don't know what the game plan is the rest of the way for the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't know what the game plan is for head coach Frank Vogel and the rest of the staff. I don't know what the game plan is for LeBron James in general. I do know this, 35 years old, obviously his 17th season in the NBA has been incredible and everything for the Los Angeles Lakers. If you watch any of the games, if you listen to our broadcast, go see when LBJ goes to the bench what happens to this Lakers team. He's been everything. The beauty is for the Lakers, you have a big enough lead in the Western Conference that if you can sustain this, you could do whatever you want coming up April 1st, coming up leading into the postseason. I'll ask Laker fans out there, just get your guys' thoughts. How should the Lakers manage LeBron James the rest of the way, these final 29 games as we get closer to the NBA playoffs? Of course, all that matters is putting your giving yourself the best chance for an NBA championship. Your phone call's coming up next, 877-710-ESPN. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so if you look at the standings in the Western Conference right now, Lakers at 41-12, Denver at 38-17, and the Clippers at 37-18. It's fascinating to me because, you know, when the season was about to start, I didn't think that being first in the Western Conference was something that the Lakers would be shooting for. I honestly didn't. I felt like, okay, well, we know there's enough talent here with LeBron James and Anthony Davis in a seven-game set. Everybody's got to step up. But with those two leading the way, it doesn't really matter if that game's... To steal one game on the road, it's not unrealistic. You can do it. Lakers have shown it. If Denver, let's say hypothetically, is the third best team in the Western Conference, and it doesn't matter about the standings. We know Clippers and the Lakers, that's 1-2, wherever you want to put 1-2 right now. Clippers, by the way, picked up Reggie Jackson. They got him in a buyout, so they have, it seems like, 35 players they can go to now on their bench and part of their starters as well. But Denver's the third best team in the Western Conference. The Lakers have already won two games on the road in Denver, one of the toughest places to play, and they've obviously done a fantastic job on that front. I didn't think that trying to win the West would be a top priority for the Lakers. I didn't feel like the Lakers, you know, come All-Star break, I didn't think they would have this big of a lead in the West either. I thought what was most important for this team and this roster and their players was just be healthy for the postseason. Be fresh, be ready. I guess that's impossible to be fresh and ready in an 82-game set, but as best as you can. And for the Lakers to be sitting in this spot now, I start looking at the rest of the schedule and you know, saying to myself, is it possible for the Lakers to wrap up the Western Conference by April 1st? Is that realistic? And I don't think it's unrealistic now. You know, you still got Denver at home that if you win that game, you then have the tiebreaker over the Denver Nuggets. The Clippers game coming up on the 8th, March 8th, that's obviously a big one. That's a Clippers home game. That's a big one for many reasons, but one of the reasons why it's also big is just staying in front of the Clippers in the Western Conference. It's actually bigger because you're 0-2 against them, and you want to show mentally to your team that you could beat the Los Angeles Clippers.
And let's not forget that they still have the make good from the Clippers. So there's two more matches against the Clippers before the playoffs starts.
Technically, right, and there's still no... nobody set a date yet of when that game is going to be made good or whatever the case is. But I think what this does is it could give the Lakers that opportunity in April, before the postseason starts, to do whatever they want with LeBron James and Anthony Davis and some of these other players, maybe some of these more veterans, because it's not unrealistic to say that the Lakers could be walking into April with the Western Conference in hand. That's not unrealistic. I mentioned this, Jess. They got some tough games coming up. You know, the Boston Celtics game, the at Memphis game will be a tough one, at New Orleans, just a, you know, I'm not saying the fan bases will be ready for the Lakers to come on those road games, but you still got, in 1 week, you got Philadelphia, you got Milwaukee, you got the Clippers. You know, so there's still going to be tough games coming up in the month of March. But one style of load management could be, come April 1st, the West is locked up, and now you could do whatever you want with these players. LeBron, like Doris Burke was saying a little bit earlier, okay, maybe he doesn't take an entire game off, but what if he just plays 20 minutes, 25 minutes?
First and third, the first 5 minutes of the first and third quarter, something like that, 20 minutes overall. I mean, there are ways to get around the load management without actually taking games off. And
if those games don't matter in April, like let's say you definitely locked up the West, that's a different way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go into late March. They travel to Cleveland on the 26th, March 26th. If they have, say, 6-7 game lead with, well, 2-4-6 with about 12 games left, who's to say LeBron, you know, plays the first half and then doesn't play again the second half? Who's to say he just plays the first and third and he just plays, you know, half 6 minutes, those both quarters? The beauty with this is now we have that flexibility.
The luxury, right? Like that's the thing, and that's what I'm going to go back to. That's why that Denver game was so big. That's why.
And you can feel it, too, watching it.
It was just big. And the Lakers could tell it was big because they were playing as if it was a playoff game. You know, and sometimes I think LeBron, he's been through this so much. He knows what he's going to need over the course of an 82-game stretch. He knows there's no secret to this. Lakers didn't make a move at the NBA trade deadline. Lakers so far, you know, if we thought, okay, hey, do we got a shot at Darren Collison? No, Darren Collison stayed retired. Do we have a shot at, I'm just going to throw out names, right? The Marvin Williams or Reggie Jackson, Damari Carroll, right? Like, okay, well, the answer has so far been, either we went after those players or we didn't, and I don't have the answer to that, but the roster has not changed. So now with this Lakers team, you're pretty much depending on the roster that you have to go toe-to-toe with the Los Angeles Clippers. You're depending on this roster, as is LeBron, as is Anthony Davis, you know, everybody. They're depending on what they got to go toe-to-toe, and that doesn't mean that the Lakers won't eventually grab a guy from the buyout market. They still have some time. Let's see what happens. I mentioned this to Mason, and Mason agreed, maybe a player like Mo Harkless, if he's bought out by the New York Knicks, how great would that be? That's a player that could fit for the Lakers. But you're kind of sitting here now saying, okay, this may very well be the team that you have going into the postseason. And when it comes to how fresh will these players be, LeBron going into his 17th season, the Lakers could be setting themselves up to where these final, you know, the final 7, 10, 12 games or so could be a luxury rather than a necessity in the West.
Yeah, and that'd be, you know, big, especially in the West where it's super talented and you have all these teams that are vying for playoff spots and, you know,
and seeding.
It's seeding, and right? I feel like if Lakers have that cushion, let the West beat up on each other. You know, we're good. We're going to stand that top spot. Whoever we get is whoever we get. Just maintain that lead. And I feel like that should be the Lakers' goal for the rest of the season, is just keep number one. Keep the one seed.
I don't think this is going to happen, but it could happen. Okay? What could happen is the Clippers have shown that the regular season is not that important to them. But I don't feel like that's going to be the trend the rest of the season. Like, I feel like now the Clippers, they're going to be gearing up. Now is going to be their time to start trying to make sure that these players all gel together. Like, they pretty much have their roster now, right? So, you know, Marcus Morris is going to be there. You know, Reggie Jackson is going to be there. Mo Harkless isn't on their team anymore. So they're going to now start working as if this is playoffs moving forward for them. And what I was referring to is, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think the Lakers and the Clippers are going to play in the second round. I don't. Right now, Utah and the Clippers are within half a game. And the significance of that is, if the Clippers fell to four, then they're playing the Lakers in the second round rather than the Western Conference Finals. I don't know if that's advantageous, if it's not. Like, I don't know how both teams think about that. If the Clippers say, we'd rather have him in the second round than the Western Conference Finals, I'm of the belief that it's better to have the Clippers later than earlier.
100%. You know, I would much rather have him in the finals where they've had to, you know, claw and
maybe
fight
have
their way
to go through a 6-7 game set against Denver or Houston,
yeah,
or Utah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's, you know, in the playoffs, I feel if you have those rough and tough games, that's going to, you know, take a lot out of you.
It'll take a toll.
It'll take a toll. And not to mention, the Clippers are pretty small. They don't really have a lot of size outside of Zubats. And if they're going to, you know, match up against someone against the Lakers who have big bodies like Anthony Davis, like Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, even put LeBron James in that category, you know, it's going to take a lot out of the players.
I was just going to say, if the playoffs started today, Jess, Clippers would have to play OKC in the first round, which I think is a tough matchup. I'm not saying they're going to lose. I'm saying the Chris Paul part of this,
Chris Paul,
the Steven Adams, a big man that can, you know, be down low, and they're going to fight and claw their way, right? And then in the second round, they'd have to play the Denver Nuggets, and that would be a series that's in Denver. Denver would have home court. Listen, I know it's early. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'd much rather see the Clippers take that path
100%
than in the first round they beat Utah or Houston, and then they got the Lakers.
Yeah, no, give them the hardest road possible, and this is what is going to happen.
That's also why I think now the Clippers will turn it on. Like, I think Clippers now are gunning for that second. They want now the second seed. If you can get Dallas in that first round rather than OKC, I think that's big. I think they'll blow out Dallas. And I think in the second round, having home court maybe means something. And even if you and I don't feel like that's going to be their strategy, they got enough talent after getting Marcus Morris. Any holes that they felt like they had, I feel like they
plugged it.
They plugged it. All right, all local coming next. We'll kind of look around Los Angeles and see what's going on in hockey, what's going on in the Pac-12 for basketball. Anything local, that's coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. It's the most anticipated title fight in recent history as undefeated heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder takes on 29-0 Tyson Fury in a rematch that the world has been waiting for, live on pay-per-view this Saturday, February 22nd, 9 p.m. Eastern. I know I'll be watching that fight. Lakers don't have a game on Saturday. They go Friday, Sunday. By the way, Sunday's game at 12:30 against the Boston Celtics. Tip-off for the game against the Memphis Grizzlies, 7:30 on Friday. All right, let's go all local. Jesse, if you can kind of educate us on what's going on around Los Angeles right now in the sports world.
We will educate you. Look at that. Got a new bed for tonight's all local.
Okay.
Sticking with Red Hot Chili Peppers, but this is off their I'm With You album, Monarchy of Roses.
Okay. All right. I like it.
All right. So, you know, NBA is still in the middle of the All-Star break. Lakers will return to action this Friday night and face the Memphis Grizzlies, while the Clippers return to action the following day on Saturday and face the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, the Kings. That one's here.
That one's
Staples.
Here. Yeah, they're both here. The Lakers Friday night, and Clippers have the matinee game at 12:30.
It's been, you know, as great as the weekend was, right? The weekend was fantastic. You had a lot of great games going on. It's been a little tough these last couple days. You don't really have sports going on.
No, it's weird. You know, we're in like it's the middle, not even the middle. It's just a weird time because it's right before baseball starts.
Baseball saved the conversation, I'll tell you that, unfortunately, for the wrong reasons, you know.
I know. What do you think would be like the major topic had the Astros not gotten caught?
We would be, first of all, a lot of the conversations around baseball would be around baseball. Right, so you'd
right,
just be
actual,
talking about,
you know, the return of baseball.
Exactly.
Dodgers, Mookie Betts, Angels, Rendon, Joe Maddon.
Exactly. And then for the Lakers, it would just be regular. By the way, there's an incredible amount of topics around the Lakers and the Clippers. Both of those teams, we've never had a time where both these teams were this good this late in the season. We've never had a time where these teams faced each other in the postseason. I think it's inevitable that we're not in this spot a couple months from now where these two teams are facing each other in May, late May.
It is going to be a big, big time in LA if both these teams wind up facing each other.
No, it's going to happen. It would be a it'd have to be a complete shock that one of those teams lost in the playoffs. They're going to face each other.
You know, never say never, because everyone was excited in that, oh, was it the 2010 season?
Mm-hmm.
When everyone thought it was going to be Kobe and the Lakers versus LeBron, and then Dwight Howard happened, and
yeah, I know.
We never saw that great finals matchup of Kobe versus LeBron. But I'm not mad at that, because LeBron is LeBron, and I don't know how
it's all
Lakers
good.
Would have faced it.
It's all good.
And we've talked about baseball. All players have reported as the Dodgers and Angels get ready for their spring training games this Saturday. The Dodgers will face the San Francisco Giants, while the Angels open up their spring games against the Chicago White Sox.
So Dodgers' first game will be this Saturday.
Yeah. Both teams face open up their spring training games this Saturday.
Okay.
And I'm excited. During the mess of all this Astros things, I completely forgot that the Angels had gotten Joe Maddon. I think they're going to be way, way better than they have been the past couple of years, which is insane a lot for the Angels.
Did you hear Artie Moreno, his comments on kind of nixing that Jock Peterson trade?
Yeah.
It sounded like it was all ego.
It is. With Artie Moreno, is 100% ego. Yeah. It's just, oh, no, they took too long. Or
I remember Mason saying that he really liked Peterson with the Angels. You know, that's going to be a good fit.
It was a terrific fit. He had a chance to play every day.
Yeah.
He had Anthony Rendon and Mike Trout, you know, batting in front
of him. In the lineup with him, right?
Yeah. Oh, it would have been great for Jock. I'm. You know, it sucks for him because now
I don't know what happens from here. Honestly, how can you... Don't you have to trade him?
They have to, because they have a logjam. They have a lot of outfielders. And, I mean, he was a platoon player last year, and he hit 30 home runs.
That's insane.
Nearly 40. He hit, I think, 36.
35, something like that, yeah.
So, you know, he's a guy who deserves to play every day. And, you know, the Dodgers were doing him a favor by trading him because they would have had
an opportunity. Yeah.
Him and Ross Stripling. But, you know, we'll see what happens with Jock. I'm pretty sure down the line he's going to wind up getting traded just for the simple fact that he's too good of a player to keep on the bench.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's tremendous amount of value too.
Oh, definitely.
You can get back. So, and if he's not a player that, like you mentioned, you're not going to use on a night in, night out basis, day in, day basis, then
yeah.
go get what you can get for him.
Yeah, right now him and AJ Pollock will probably split time depending on the matchup.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sure Jock will love to get traded to a different team where he has a chance to play every day. And not to mention he's on a contract year, so he's looking for the big bucks.
And it's an important year for him.
Definitely.
You know, this is where you're going to make your next contract, so it's important for him.
Mm-hmm. And then moving on to hockey and NHL, the Ducks lost yesterday to the Calgary Flames 6-4 and faced the Florida Panthers tomorrow night in Anaheim.
Should we just do this? It sounds like for hockey right now in Southern California, we don't even have to say the result because you already know they probably lost.
More than likely,
I'm sorry, hockey fans out there, but sounds like this is not exactly the Ducks and the Kings season this year.
Not this season. And, okay. You know, the Kings also lost earlier today to the Winnipeg Jets 6-3. But, you know, for the Kings...
Was that the Ducks? You mean the Ducks lost earlier today?
No, the Kings lost earlier today. The Ducks lost yesterday.
Okay.
Yesterday, there was big news from the Kings. It was announced that the Kings traded forward Tyler Toffoli to the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
The Kings will receive forward Tim Shadler, the rights to forward prospect Tyler Madden, and a 2020 second round draft pick.
Okay.
The Kings will also receive a fourth round draft pick in 2020 if Toffoli re-signs with the
Canucks. Writing all this down. Don't worry.
I see you really quickly. Let me know if I want to repeat any of this stuff.
No, I got you. Just one time. One take.
And, you know, Toffoli was a really big fan favorite. He even said he didn't care that the Kings are in a rebuild. He wanted to stay.
With Los Angeles.
And, you know, that's a lot. You hear that a lot with teams in L.A. Because, come on, L.A. is the best place to live.
Well, but it does sound like, all right, they got to rebuild, right? I mean,
no,
these
franchises, he was
it's okay to kind of let go from the past.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was, you know, the last time they won the Stanley Cup was in 2014. I remember watching all those games at a bar. It was such a crazy time. My best friend was on leave from the military, so we'd go to the bar every night, and we wound up watching all these games. I think NHL and NBA have by far the best playoffs, because there's something about it when the playoffs start. The energy. It's the fact that they're series. They're not one game, so it's like everything that goes from one game easily picks up to the next and to the next and until the series is over. And I think that was the year the Kings had, they won every series on a game seven. That was a crazy, crazy time. But he rejoins his teammate from the 2014 championship squad, Tanner Parsons, in Vancouver. So, you know, good luck to Tyler Toffoli. Best of luck. He was the only young. He was only 27. Hmm. He was, you know, one of the players that the Kings thought was going to be their franchise
guy.
Yeah. Generation Next is what they called it. But, You know, it's the
didn't
sports.
Happen. Didn't happen.
Happen. But, you know, you never know. He might come back because he is a free agent then the next year.
What do we got going on in the Pac-12?
So nothing going on in the Pac-12 today, but USC will travel and face number 18 Colorado on Thursday, with UCLA also traveling to Utah.
All right, so the USC and UCLA have some work to do. I'm imagining the only way they get in this tournament, they have to win. They have to win the Pac-12 tournament. You know, that automatic bid or however that works. So that's probably the only way, and we're not too far from it.
No, it's right around the corner. I mean, we're in
two and a half, 3 weeks or so, and we'll they'll be in. Where's the Pac-12 do theirs? In Vegas, right?
I think they move it around, but it's usually either Vegas or LA. You know, Staples Center,
yeah.
Vegas,
yeah.
It's always those parts. I mean, they're in the conversation. Both the Bruins and the Trojans are just a game out of first. You know, that the game against Colorado for the USC is going to be important because that's going to be for the lead. Right now, the Colorado Buffaloes
yep.
and Oregon Ducks are both tied at 9-4 at the top of the Pac-12.
In the conference?
Mm-hmm.
So they're only a game out from first?
Okay. It's crazy. There's six teams all within a game for first. It's
okay.
Colorado, Oregon, Arizona, Arizona State, USC, and UCLA.
All right, let's go USC and UCLA. Come on, pick it up a notch. Give something, give LA something to cheer about. Okay, anything else on the local front?
That's all I got.
That's all you got?
That's all I got for today.
Okay.
We'll see what happens tomorrow.
All right, let's appreciate you doing that. Appreciate you gathering all that information. You know, as we kind of continue to talk about what's been the biggest story in sports by far, I want to do this. There was a conversation a little bit earlier today from another player speaking and being very vocal about just the situation and the predicament. And there's going to be players that look to kind of figure out what justice is in their own way. Okay, hey, if the commissioner's not going to do it, we're going to do it. I want to talk about that a little bit after we come back from break. And what I'm basically referring to there is this going to be a, I don't know if the word dangerous is the right word, but how players react to what the Houston Astros did in 2017. I hope it's not going to be the case, but we're going to talk about that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so this is, I feel like this is baseball in a nutshell. Baseball in a nutshell. By the way, appreciate everybody that's tuned in to the show and to the broadcast. Thank you to Kirk Morrison that hopped on with us and talked some baseball, obviously talked some football. This is how I feel typically baseball handles things. A lot of the times it's the players kind of controlling things. What I mean by that is, okay, you know what? I don't like how slow you rounded the bases, or you know, you watched the ball too long on your home run, your trot took too long, or you didn't hustle to first base, whatever the case is, right? Players typically, you slid dirty into second. Players typically, they figure out how to control the game. And the one fear that I have coming up this upcoming season is that players like Nick Markakis from the Atlanta Braves has a mentality of how he thinks he can kind of monitor things with the Houston Astros. Here's Nick Markakis.
I feel like every single guy over there needs a beating. You know, it's anger.
Play it one more time.
You know, it's wrong. I feel like every single guy over there needs a beating. You know, it's anger.
So this is the issue I have with listening to that. And look, there's more context to it. He's talking in the moment. He continues to say that it's wrong. They're messing with people's careers. I don't like the word beating. I just don't like that term, you know, and I even said this last week and I mentioned it to Jesse as well. I talked about how I'm not a fan of, all right, let's, every time these players come up, when Correa comes up or Bregman comes up or Altuve, whatever the case is, put one right in the middle of his back, right between the numbers. I'm not a fan of that. And this is me just talking more from, I'm not a fan of violence in any of these sports. Some people might like it. Some people might say, yup, that guy deserves it. You know what? Put one right on his right arm or hit him, I don't know, on the leg or whatever the case is, in the back. I'm not a fan of that. And my fear is that's going to happen a lot to the Houston Astros. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not, you know, here to justify what the Astros did and say it was okay, because you guys know that that's not the case. They cheated their way to a World Series in 2017. I've already spent a lot of time talking about Rob Manfred and how I think the commissioner has completely lost control of Major League Baseball. And you could, you know, you could sense that just by the dialogue and the conversation that people are having around baseball right now and the anger from the players and everything else. But I don't want to see, you know, all these brawls in 2020. And what I don't want to see is that, you know, every game or every couple of games, these players are getting hit with one, because you just never know what happens with a 90, 95, 100 mile per hour fastball that's coming. The intention could be hit somebody on the shoulder, hit somebody in the back, but you lose control and you hit the guy in the head. That's not what I want to see this upcoming season. I'm completely not a fan of that. What I do want to see is, I want to see Rob Manfred, who came on and talked about he's sorry for calling the trophy a piece of metal. This is Rob Manfred, who apologized for the way he described the World Series trophy.
In an effort to make a rhetorical point, I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way, and I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way. And again, I want to apologize for it.
So I'm good with the apology. I like apologies. I like when somebody makes a mistake and then decides to come on and try and correct that mistake. What I'm not good with is where Major League Baseball sits today, where Rob Manfred sits today, where you know, players from opposing teams that are saying, yeah, I'll throw at him. If I see an Astro up at the plate, I'm going after him. I'm not comfortable with all that. And I think one of the ways to kind of correct the problems and the issues right now with Major League Baseball, Mason and I were talking about it a little bit earlier. This is before I started my show. We talked about, okay, what would make me feel good, and I think what would make fans feel good, and what I think would make players feel good, maybe I won't even use feel good, but make us feel better, is if you take that 2017 World Series away from the Astros. You take that banner that's sitting up at Minute Maid Park and you take it down. Anything that the Astros won in 2017, you make sure, everybody's talking about setting some type of a precedent, setting, you know, having this kind of this mindset of, okay, whatever we do now, it's going to have to be the thing we do moving forward. Well, if you're going to do that, it's okay to send the message that if you cheated, we're going to take away whatever you want. Whatever you stole, we're going to take it back. And if Rob Manfred doesn't do that, I mean, frankly, to be honest, I don't know how this guy can continue to be commissioner of Major League Baseball. I don't know how you can put the entire league in his hands, which he's obviously clearly proven in this time right now where it's so critical for baseball to gain trust back, to figure out the mistakes that they've made over the last couple of years, to have allowed this stuff to happen, and even rumors about it happening with the Houston Astros. The best thing to do from here is to clean up the mess that has already been committed. But that's not going to happen by letting the Houston Astros keep that World Series in 2017. That's not going to happen by having the Astros continue to have up in the banners a championship where they really didn't deserve it. You know, Jess, the way I kind of look at this, I'm not saying this is the answer to everything, and I'm not saying that this is going to solve the problem and you as a Dodger fan, you're going to feel so much better, but I do feel like it's an important step, it's a critical step, and I feel like a lot of people care about taking that 2017 trophy away from the Astros.
I mean, it seems like that's the most vocal point all the players have been making outside of Altuve didn't earn the MVP. It's, you know, they didn't earn that World Series title. They didn't earn the World Series title. They cheated. They did this. But you said it. It's simple. Manfred, all the players don't like that they didn't get
punished. Just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right.
And you know what? I think they understand anonymity part because they spoke, but it's no, do more. The players obviously want more to happen because they feel like they got cheated. They feel like if someone else went out there and did this, they wouldn't get reprimanded.
Well, it is kind of confusing. By the way, here's Aaron Judge of the New York Yankees talking about if the Astros should be stripped of their World Series title.
Astros should be stripped of their 2017 championship. I just don't think it holds any value. You cheated and you didn't earn it. You know, that's how I feel, is it wasn't earned. You know, it wasn't earned the way of, you know, playing the game right and fighting till the end and knowing that, you know, we're competing, we're competitors. And the biggest thing about competition is laying it all out in the line, and, you know, whoever's the better player, better person, you know, comes out on top, you know, and, you know, you just lay it out there. And, you know, to know that another team had an advantage that, you know, nothing you can really guard against, that I just don't feel like that's earned, or, you know, yeah, that's, it's not earned.
That's the key for me. And I think Aaron Judge, you know, you heard him take a second there to kind of give this some thought.
That said it all.
Yeah.
That
pause, you know.
That said it all.
They didn't earn it. That's it. That's what it comes down to. They didn't earn it. And if, you know, if Manfred doesn't think that it's a big deal whether that piece of metal exists or it doesn't with the Houston Astros, obviously the players care. Obviously the fans care. It means something. You know, it really, really does mean something. And I think, I don't know how much more of, how many more player interviews he has to hear to get that through his head. And I don't know how many more sports platforms have to talk about it, whether it's here on the West Coast or it's in the East Coast or wherever. All across the country, this is what everybody's talking about. What more of an example do you want? By the way, if you're a Houston Astros fan, do you want that World Series? Do you? I mean, do you really want that World Series in 2017 that you cheated to get it? I mean, are you good sleeping at night saying, yup, I don't care how we got it, that banner is hanging at Minute Maid Park? I don't think you do.
The sad part is there are, I without a doubt, a handful of fans that feel that way.
So maybe there's a handful of fans. But I would imagine that the majority of Houston Astro fans are disgusted with their franchise.
They definitely don't. It's such a hard thing to feel because it's almost you can't put it into words. Because as a fan, you're rooting for this team. You go out there, you buy tickets to go see them play. You buy their jerseys. You
buy
their
everybody does
bobbleheads.
Everybody
you do
does
all this stuff, and now it's all tainted. You know, how are you going to feel when, if you go down the street and you see someone wearing an Altuve jersey?
So that part is going to be changed, and it will never be the same. So All those players, it's going to be really tough whatever they accomplish the rest of their career. By the way, if they have bad seasons this year, let's say Altuve doesn't have a good year.
Oh.
Think about that. Bregman doesn't have a good... Let's say those players that, you know, are some of the best players in the league, or let's say we thought were the best players in the league. Let's say they don't have a good season. I'm telling you, man, I think it's a disgrace that they're still rocking that World Series. I really, really do. And the players that have come out and talked about how much they're in disgust of what happened is a big deal, too. Mike Trout had maybe the longest interview I've ever heard.
That's the longest I've ever heard him spoke, period.
You know, I'm joking around, but you know, obviously Mike Trout isn't one that grabs a mic all the time and says, let me open up about things. You know, Mike Trout isn't one of those players.
LeBron spoke about it. LeBron James. This is a player
tweeted
who...
about MLB.
Yeah, he talked about this. He called.
Do you have it up?
Out.
Do you have it up for those that haven't seen it? I want you to read it if you once you get it up. But here's LeBron James, who obviously is running the NBA, one of the biggest athletes in the world. He's commenting about it. Go ahead, Jess.
Player speaking today about how disgusted, mad, hurt, broken, etc., etc. about this. Literally, the ball with the baseball emoji is in your court, or should I say field, and you need to fix this for the sake of the sport. Hashtag just my thoughts coming from a sports junkie, regardless my own sport I play. What a hashtag.
That's LeBron James. That's the biggest athlete in sports speaking about another sport. We get the honor to do this again tomorrow starting at 6:30. We'll continue doing this, the Sliwa Show, all week long. Make sure to tune in tomorrow morning to Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. That starts at 6 a.m. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. L.A., have a great rest of your night.